Chapter 14. Snares. I watch the heavens, but I find no calling. Something I can do to change what's coming. Stay close to me while the sky is falling. Don't want to be left alone. Don't want to be alone. Sarah McLachlan, World on Fire. The terraforming of Paquin had kicked up a unique atmospheric mix, the end result being a slightly orangish tint to the sky overhead that produced spectacular sunrises and sunsets, which in turn formed the scenic basis for Paquin's thriving tourist industry. Serenity made planetfall some hours before dawn, and so as the crew prepared to scatter and gather further information regarding the supposed alien and its owner, they were just in time to catch one of the famous sunrises. The doctor stood, one hand buried in a coat pocket, the other dancing disc of metal he'd found in the woods on three hills over his knuckles, watching the sunrise over the crowded buildings of the docks. He both loathed and cherished sunrises. He'd seen so many, on thousands of worlds, in thousands of ages, all of them beautiful. But always they told of another day gone, another length of time between himself and everything he'd ever lost. It should have seemed strange that a single day's time should mean so much to a man who had seen so many centuries, and only admitted to nine of them out loud. But there it was. He'd given up his claim to being a logical, sensible creature a long time ago. The orange sky overhead now plucked more deeply at old hurts, and for a moment he gave in to the ache, allowed himself to see, just for a moment, another sky. This one a darker burnt orange, with twin suns overhead and mountains far bigger than any of these humans around him had ever dreamt of, stretching into infinity. And there, on the edge of sight, a great glittering dome, full of the promise of enlightenment and company, and the threat of confinement and stagnation. He'd moved the memories away, with a familiar mix of grief and guilt, and turned away from the sky, in time to see Kaylee, bright as a tropical flower in her patterned T-shirt, the sleeves of her mechanics coveralls tied around her waist. There was, he noticed, a fuzzy teddy bear patch sewn onto one leg of the coveralls. That struck him as very Kaylee. She gave him a tentative smile. "What's wrong, Doctor?" "Why do you ask?" "You looked so sad," she replied, looking sad herself at the thought. "Standing there, watching the sky?" He gave her a smile. It wasn't a very good one, he feared, being rather small and wistful, in light of the thoughts in his head. "Oh, just remembering." He looked away. "It doesn't matter." He looked back at her and produced a better smile. "I'm fine." He took in the rest of the crew, standing in scattered groups on the ramp and in the hold, going over the finer details of the day's work. Simon stood a few feet behind Kaylee, talking quietly with his sister, though he shot glances toward the mechanic and the doctor from time to time. "Heading off to case the joint?" the doctor asked her. She giggled a little. "Sorta. There ain't been much information about this alien on the Cortex, just rumors that some guy named Carson Rayner's got one. Even Badger couldn't give us much more than that. So the captain wants us to find out how we might get a closer look at it before we figure out how to steal it." She tilted her head, smiling sweetly at him. "River and me are going to go look at some of the sideshows, see what we can learn from the carnies. You want to come?"
"I'd love to," said the doctor, genuinely pleased. He'd planned to attach himself to one of the group anyhow, but it was always nicer to get an invite rather than just going. He caught the look on Simon's face over Kaylee's head. "Isn't Simon coming?"
"Nah, it's his turn to stay with the ship, make sure no one steals it or something."
The doctor, still eyeing the expression on the young doctor's face, felt compelled to add, "I don't think your boyfriend likes me very much." Kaylee's bright brown eyes twinkled.
"That's 'cause you're so shwee.
Simon's worried I'm going to decide to dump him and chase you instead." She eyed the doctor over with frank appraisal, and he felt his ears getting a little warm.
"It's fun to make him sweat a bit," she said, dropping her voice so her lover couldn't hear. "Simon's a bit silly sometimes. I ain't planning to do any such thing."
"Oh, that's good." The doctor felt faintly relieved. "Still," she added, a wicked glint in her eye, "till he figures it out, it don't hurt none to admire your cute backside in the meantime." With that parting shot, she turned and walked back over to Simon and River, wrapping her arms around the young man's waist and leaving the doctor to flounder in acute embarrassment. All these centuries, and he still didn't know what to do with remarks like that. Casting around for a distraction, he spotted Mal coming down Serenity's ramp, pulling on his gloves.
"Captain," he said in greeting, smiling broadly.
"Good morning."
"Hope you're planning to make yourself useful today, Doc," said Mal curtly.
"Oh, I wouldn't dream otherwise,"
replied the doctor coolly. Kaylee has invited me to accompany her and River. I trust that's acceptable.
Ma considered this, frowning some.
I don't need anyone getting in trouble today, he said, eyeing the doc with an expression that said he very clearly considered the other man to be a trouble magnet.
The doctor felt this was a bit unfair, since he hadn't even gotten into trouble yet.
Don't need you attracting attention.
Oh, I blend very well, the doctor assured him, despite all evidence to the contrary.
Mal did not look convinced.
These girls can take care of themselves, mostly, he said. But if you're going along with them, then you're going to be gathering information just like the rest of us.
He gave the doctor a significant look. See what you can pick up. The doctor hesitated, sensing that a discussion of the finer nuances of telepathic ability, such as the fact that he really wasn't the kind of mind reader Mal thought he was probably not something to bring up just now. Besides, it wasn't as if the captain would know the difference, right?
Of course, he said evasively.
The captain nodded curtly, and turned away to speak with Zoe. The doctor sighed and shoved his hands in his pockets. Why was he allowing this man to order him about? It was starting to go beyond the uncharacteristic desire to keep a low profile. Perhaps it was because, as yet, he had seen very little sign of the usual sort of crises he dealt with. His fingers closed over the little metal tag in his pocket. Little sign, indeed. What was worse, he'd had a devil of a time gaining the information he wanted about this time and place. Oh, he'd gotten the basic history easily enough, proving his theory that this lad was, indeed, descended from the lost colonists of the early 22nd century. They all thought Earth no longer existed, that it was lost. Well, that made sense. Shortly after the original colonists' departure, Earth had undergone a succession of alien invasions, and was so busy fighting and rebuilding that the colonists had been all but forgotten. But why had contact never been re-established? It was almost as if this little corner of the universe was isolated, kept separate from the rest. And why weren't there any non-humans about? It was extremely interesting. But history was the bulk of it. He knew the details about the war, now 8 years past, and he'd already known that Malcolm Reynolds and Zoe had been soldiers in it. He knew that most of Sorrenti's crew were wanted by the Alliance. Smuggling and illegal salvage seemed to form the bulk of the charges, but that they were also wanted in relation to something the government was calling the Miranda Conspiracy. Information about Miranda was almost non-existent. Rumors and speculations, and everywhere signs that the powers that be had done their utmost to erase anything to do with it. The doctor considered himself quite good at making computers and databases talk to him, but he wasn't a professional hacker and doubted he could get past the barriers and such to the truth without setting off a great many alarms. This did not fuss him particularly. He preferred hearing things from an organic being, not a computer. It was the Reavers he'd been the most interested in, but again he found little more than rumors and campfire tales. Men gone savage on the edge of space. Cannibals and unspeakable madmen. Monsters in the dark, really. None of it explained that unfathomable well of rage and agony he'd experienced on Three Hills. That didn't happen simply from going nutters in deep space. The few rumors he'd found in relation to Serenity and the Reavers was that they'd found evidence the government had created the Reavers, which would, of course, explain why the government so disliked Mal and his crew. A military experiment gone wrong. He'd seen that 100 times. And it might explain the strange little psychic tags, an attempt to gain control over something uncontrollable.
Too many questions, the doctor muttered, and I don't even know which ones to ask.
Simon took his sister by the shoulders. Be careful, he said. Stay with Kaylee and don't wander off.
River rolled her eyes. Not a child, Simon. I know that, Maymay, but...
He broke off, and she stood on tiptoe to kiss his cheek.
"'I'll be all right,' she assured him. "'The storm will keep me safe.'
The doctor's eyes narrowed. Sometime very soon, he was going to have to sit down and have a chat with that girl. Psychic she might or might not be, and while a psychic human with no real control over her abilities might be able to pick up basic surface thoughts and ideas from people around her, even from Time Lords with centuries of practice at keeping their heads to themselves— There was no way she could pick up something so linked to his past and self like that. Not without slipping right past his defenses and going far, far deeper than she should be able to. And all without him noticing a thing. Just like the Reaver in the woods. There seemed to be a disconcerting number of people around here with free, full access passed to his head. Simon still looked unhappy about letting his sister go. The boy was desperately protective of her. Feeling sorry for him, and understanding a bit how he felt, the doctor stepped up to him, putting a hand on River's shoulder. "Don't worry," he told the young man. "I'll keep an eye on her." Simon looked torn between suspicion and gratitude, and finally settled on gratitude. "Thank you," he said in his quiet voice. "I'd appreciate that." The doctor beamed at him. "Good man," he said warmly. And then, because he couldn't resist, he added, "I'll keep an eye on Kaylee, too." And winked. He turned and strolled away, feeling Simon's glare like the heat of a fire on his back. Jane disappeared somewhere, presumably to gather information, but probably just to look for a drink. Anari watched Kaylee and River walk away from Serenity, arms linked, both giggling. She smiled. It was wonderful to see River take such joy in life, to have a chance to be a child for once. It gave her hope that the strange, gifted girl might someday find healing. Her smile faded as she watched the tall, skinny shape of the doctor trail after them, hands jammed into the pockets of his long coat, an abstracted frown on his narrow face. "You're sending him with the girls?" she asked, sensing Mal come up behind her. "I figure they're the least likely to get into trouble," he replied, moving to stand beside her. "The Alliance may still want River," she reminded him. Mal slanted a glance, half amused, half challenging, down at her. "What, and I'll turn her in? You still don't trust him?"
"Why should I? You don't."
"Yeah, well," Mal rubbed a hand over the back of his neck, "man sort of saved my life back on Three Hills."
"So did the operative, and you'd probably shoot him if you ever saw him again."
"That was different."
"How?"
"Look, Nara, the doc went after a Reaver with his bare hands to keep the Goram thing off me. That's worth a bit more in my books than just calling off some Alliance soldiers about to shoot us. And he ain't done anything that says he means us any harm."
The hand moved from his neck to rub over his hair, leaving it sticking up in the back.
"I ain't saying I trust him, not really, but he has earned something close to it, at least for a spell." She sighed.
"I suppose. I just wish we knew who he really was."
"Darling, ain't one of us in this verse knows who anyone really is." He grinned crookedly at her. "Except maybe River, and that's only 'cause she cheats." Anara smiled at that, and just possibly at his unthinking use of the word darling.
"Perhaps,"
she agreed. Her eyes went back towards the trio, but they had already vanished around the corner. Mal's fingertips brushed her arm, so lightly she might have imagined the touch. She turned to meet his grave blue eyes anyway. "They'll be all right," he said quietly.
"I'm sure they will. But if you don't mind, Mal, I'll worry a bit about it anyway."
A teasing light came into his eyes, and he opened his mouth. But what he might have taunted her about she never knew, because they both turned at the sound of feet on the ramp. Zoe stood at the top, hands cradling her abdomen in a gesture Anara had come to recognize as worry, though her face remained stony as ever. Mal recognized the posture as well, because he spoke instantly. "What's wrong?" "Got a wave, sir. Think you'd better come and see it." Anara shared a worried glance with the captain. Who would be trying to contact them all the way out here? Mal looked back to a second and nodded. "Serious?" Zoe's face grew, if possible, even grimmer. "You'd better come and see, sir." Bright off-key music from a calliope spilled into the muggy morning air, accompanied by the smell of sweets and burnt popcorn and animal dung. The bouquet of carnival, the same that could be found on 1,000 worlds the universe over. The doctor had always had a special place in his heart for carnivals, though he'd never determined precisely why. Perhaps it was the same nameless attraction that nearly every sentient species in creation shared. Or perhaps he just felt at home amongst the freaks and geeks. A little ways ahead of him, Kaylee and River giggled together over a bright, gaudy, gimcack display in a vendor's stall. He smiled at the sight. He didn't get to see people just being happy very much these days, it seemed. Humming softly under his breath, he pulled out the Reaver tag once more, twirling it between his fingers. Sarah Jane would have really liked those two girls, he thought, and the metal disc in his hand stilled as he paused in surprise. Why had she sprung to his mind so suddenly? Thinking of her was scarcely less painful than thinking of Rose, although it was a far older and familiar pain. One of several, really, as other faces came into his mind's eye. Gods, he was going to get maudlin if he wasn't careful. Then he shrugged mentally and vowed that, if she let him, he'd drop in for tea one of these days. Surely they could manage that now. He'd set the tag dancing on his fingers again, steering his thoughts determinately away from that direction. The tag. Odd little thing. Where had it come from? Who, in this benighted corner of the universe, could possibly have the skill to make such a thing? What the hell was it for? Why couldn't he stop playing with it? A flash of something out of the corner of his eye caught his attention, and he turned his head, frowning to see... nothing. Well, not nothing, exactly, since there were loads of people out and about, but nothing suspicious-worthy. He turned his own movement into a more casual tourist-scanning-the-scenery sort of thing, looking for anything out of the ordinary, but still saw nothing to grab his attention. Ah, well. Half-consciously, he started the tag dancing over his knuckles again, letting the sounds of the carnival wash over him. He was aware of Kaylee haggling with the vendor. For such a sweet-tempered girl, she was a startlingly vicious bargainer, and he started to grin at the vendor's muttered Chinese profanities and pained looks. River was silent now, the moment of unguarded girlish behavior passed, and her dark eyes were watching the vendor intently. The doctor ran a fingertip over the smooth beveled edge of the tag, turning his gaze away from the girls to study a brightly painted poster advertising "The Most Fearsome Freaks in the Verse." Again, something flickered down the edge of his vision, and he tried to focus on it. Nothing. His breath hissed between his teeth in frustration, and with a sudden, almost violent motion, he shoved the tag back into his coat pocket. It was right then that River screamed.